Ever imagined a scenario where, like, the outcome of your case could totally hinge on whether you file in state or federal court?
Oh, yeah, that's a classic scenario.
That's the wild situation we're diving into today with Byrd v. Blue Ridge Rural Electric Cooperative.
Yeah, a 1958 Supreme Court case.
It's a cornerstone in understanding the sometimes rocky relationship between state and federal courts.
It's a prime example of how even seemingly straightforward personal injury lawsuits
Right.
can just spiral into these really complex constitutional questions.
Totally. James Byrd, he gets injured working on a power line construction project in South Carolina, files a workers' compensation claim, and then decides to sue Blue Ridge, the company that hired his employer, for negligence in federal court. Seems pretty standard so far, right?
Well, that's where things get a little dicey.
Okay.
Blue Ridge throws a curveball, arguing that since Byrd was working on a project so essential to their business,
Oh, interesting.
he should be considered a statutory employee under South Carolina's Workmen's Compensation Act.
This seemingly minor legal detail throws a wrench into everything.
So, for our listener, can you break down what statutory employee means in this context?
Sure, it boils down to this. If Byrd is classified as a statutory employee of Blue Ridge, he's limited to workers' compensation benefits and barred from suing them directly. So Blue Ridge is trying to use a state law to shield themselves from a lawsuit filed in federal court.
So we've got a potential conflict brewing here, right?
Pavelli.
Byrd wants his day in court, but Blue Ridge is saying, not so fast, pointing to this state law quirk.
Right.
What happens next?
That's when the case goes from local dispute to national precedent, ending up before the Supreme Court in 1958. It becomes a major decision about the interplay of state and federal law, particularly in the realm of diversity jurisdiction.
Which I'm guessing explains why Byrd, a North Carolina resident, was
Right.
able to sue Blue Ridge, a South Carolina company,
Yep.
in federal court in the first place. Exactly. Diversity jurisdiction allows federal courts to hear cases involving parties from different states.
Okay.
The interesting wrinkle here is that under South Carolina law,
Wow.
whether someone is a statutory employee is a question for a judge to decide,
Right.
but the Seventh Amendment guarantees a right to a jury trial
Yeah.
in federal civil cases.
So, which one takes precedence?
That is the
That's a
question.
real head scratcher.
It is.
State law says judge, federal law says jury. What does the Supreme Court decide?
Well, the Supreme Court, led by Justice Brennan, ultimately sided with Byrd.
Yow.
They ruled that even though the case was based on a dispute arising under state law, Byrd was still entitled to a jury trial on the statutory employee issue in federal court.
Wow, so the Supreme Court really went to bat for Byrd's right to a jury trial.
They did.
It seems like they weren't messing around with the Seventh Amendment.
You're spot on. The court recognized the Seventh Amendment as a cornerstone of our judicial system. Justice Brennan even referred to federal courts as an independent system for administering justice. It's a powerful statement about the role of juries in our legal system.
So does this mean federal law automatically overrides state law every time?
Well, not exactly.
Is the South Carolina Workmen's Compensation Act basically useless in federal court now?
No, it's more nuanced than that.
Okay.
The court wasn't trying to throw out South Carolina law entirely. They were looking for a balance between respecting state law and upholding the integrity of the federal judicial process.
Okay, so there's this constant tension between wanting to apply the relevant state law and also making sure those fundamental federal rights are protected. How do courts find that sweet spot?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right.
In this case, Byrd v. Blue Ridge became a key precedent in refining something called the Erie Doctrine.
Okay, I think a quick breakdown of the Erie Doctrine is in order here. What exactly is it all about?
In a nutshell, the Erie Doctrine says that when federal courts hear cases based on state law,
Okay, they should apply the substantive law of that state, but it doesn't mean they have to follow every single state procedural rule.
So the Supreme Court is saying that the right to a jury trial,
Right.
as guaranteed by the Seventh Amendment,
Yeah.
is a federal procedural rule that outweighs a conflicting state procedural rule in this case.
Precisely. This is why Byrd v. Blue Ridge is so significant. It clarifies that the Erie Doctrine doesn't turn federal courts into clones of state courts. They still have their own distinct procedures. It's like they're speaking two languages at the same time.
It's like this balancing act trying to make sure both state and federal interests are respected.
Yeah.
It reminds me of how legal precedents evolve over time,
Yeah.
with one case building upon another, adding layers of interpretation and clarification.
Absolutely.
Speaking of which, did all the justices agree with the outcome in Byrd v. Blumidge?
Well,
I can't imagine a decision this impactful was unanimous. You're right to be skeptical. Supreme Court cases, especially those dealing with fundamental legal principles,
right,
rarely result in unanimous decisions.
Okay.
And Byrd v. Blumidge was no exception.
Okay.
In fact, there were several dissenting opinions that really highlight the complexity of this issue.
Ooh, I love a good legal debate.
Yeah.
Lay it on me. Who disagreed and why?
Justices Frankfurter and Harlan, for starters,
right,
penned a dissent emphasizing the importance of respecting state law and judicial procedure.
So they were firmly in the state's rights camp.
In a way, yes. They argued that allowing a jury trial on the statutory employee issue, as the majority decided, tipped the scales too far in favor of federal power and disrupted the balance between state and federal courts.
What were their main concerns with the majority's approach?
They felt that South Carolina's established process for determining statutory employment was an integral part of the state's workers' compensation scheme.
So in their view, having a federal jury decide this issue was essentially meddling with a state's ability to manage its own internal affairs.
Exactly. They saw it as a federalism issue, with the federal government potentially overstepping its boundaries. Mm-hmm. It's a classic debate that pops up again and again in our legal system.
Yeah.
Where do we draw the line between federal power and state sovereignty?
Did Justices Frankfurter and Harlan buy into the majority's argument that this was just about procedural rules?
Well,
not substantive law.
They weren't convinced by that distinction.
Okay.
They argued that determining statutory employment, even if labeled procedural, had a direct impact on the substantive rights of those involved.
Meaning it could ultimately determine whether Byrd had a right to sue at all.
Precisely. And for Justices Frankfurter and Harlan, that was enough to warrant sticking with the state's established procedure. Mm. They weren't willing to sacrifice what they saw as state autonomy for the sake of a federal procedural rule, even one as important as the Seventh Amendment.
It sounds like they were also concerned about what this decision could mean for future cases.
You're picking up on a crucial point.
Okay.
They worried that the majority's ruling could open the floodgates to forum shopping.
Right.
Where plaintiffs would strategically choose to file in federal court just to get a jury trial on an issue that would be decided by a judge in state court.
Interesting.
And of course, that could lead to inconsistencies and unpredictability in how state laws are applied.
So their dissent was about more than just Byrd's individual case.
Yeah.
They were sounding the alarm about potential long-term consequences for the balance of power between state and federal courts.
Exactly. They saw the majority's decision as a potential slippery slope, eroding state sovereignty and potentially creating chaos in the application of state law across different forms.
Okay, we've got the Frankfurter-Harlan perspective laid out.
Right.
Were there any other dissenting voices in the mix?
Indeed, there were.
Okay.
Justice Whitaker offered a different take in his dissent. While he agreed that the case should be sent back to the lower court, he didn't agree with the majority's reasoning for doing so.
So he was team send it back, but with a different game plan.
Yeah, you could say that.
What was his issue with the majority's approach?
Justice Whitaker believed that the majority had misinterpreted South Carolina law.
Okay.
He argued that the question of statutory employment was fundamentally a legal issue to be decided by a judge.
Okay.
Not a question of fact for a jury to wrestle with.
So in his view, even if Burgard got a new trial, it shouldn't be up to a jury to make that determination.
That's the crux of his argument.
Okay.
He felt that the majority was overstepping its bounds by essentially forcing a jury trial onto a matter that, according to him, South Carolina law had clearly designated as a question for a judge to decide.
So we've got three distinct opinions on the table.
Yes.
The majority champions a jury trial.
Right.
Frankfurter and Harlan advocate for deference to state procedure. And Whitaker argues for judicial determination, even in a new trial.
Precisely. And this clash of viewpoints illustrates what makes Supreme Court cases so fascinating.
Right.
They force us to grapple with complex legal questions.
Yeah.
Consider multiple perspectives and explore the nuances of our legal system.
Right.
It's not always about finding a clear-cut right answer.
It's more like a high-stakes legal debate club where the decisions have real-world consequences.
That's a great way to put it. And these debates don't end when the gavel comes down. Legal scholars and practitioners continue to analyze and debate cases like Byrd v. Blue Ridge, trying to make sense of the ever-evolving relationship between state and federal law.
It reminds us that law isn't a dusty old set of rules carved in stone.
Yeah.
It's a living, breathing thing that's constantly being interpreted, reinterpreted, and shaped by new cases and contexts.
Absolutely. Cases like Byrd v. Blue Ridge offer us a glimpse into that dynamic process and remind us that even seemingly technical legal issues can have profound implications for how our justice system operates.
So we've really dissected Byrd v. Blue Ridge, haven't we?
We have.
From the specifics of the case itself to Supreme Court's decision and those insightful dissenting opinions, it feels like we've covered it all.
I think so.
But before we wrap up our deep dive, I'm curious about the lasting legacy of this case.
Yeah.
How did Byrd v. Blue Ridge actually change the legal landscape?
Well, that's a great question.
Yeah.
Byrd v. Blue Ridge didn't just fade into the background after the decision was handed down.
Right.
It continues to shape legal strategies and court proceedings even today.
So beyond being a staple in law school classrooms, it's actually a tool that lawyers use in practice.
Absolutely. Byrd v. Blue Ridge forced lawyers to become even more strategic when choosing where to file their cases.
Okay.
It highlighted how the choice of a state versus a federal court can have a significant impact on the outcome.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to who decides crucial questions.
So it's like a high-stakes game of chess.
Right.
With attorneys trying to anticipate how the rules of each court might affect their clients' chances.
That's a perfect analogy.
Right.
For example, a plaintiff's lawyer handling a case involving state law claims might be more inclined to file in federal court after Byrd, especially if they think a jury might be more sympathetic to their client's case than a judge.
And I imagine a defense attorney facing a similar scenario might try to keep the case in state court if they think a judge might be more likely to rule in their favor.
Precisely. Byrd v. Blue Ridge added a whole new dimension to litigation strategy. It emphasized the importance of not just knowing the relevant laws, but also understanding the procedural nuances of each court system and how those procedures might interact with the substantive issues at play.
It also reinforces this idea that federal courts, while bound to apply state substantive law in cases like Byrd's, still maintain their own distinct procedures and traditions.
Right. And as we've seen, that can lead to some fascinating conflicts and legal showdowns, sometimes requiring the Supreme Court to step in and clarify the boundaries between state and federal authority.
It's like this constant balancing act, trying to uphold both state and federal interests without one side completely overpowering the other.
A very delicate dance indeed.
Right.
And cases like Byrd v. Blue Ridge provide valuable markers along the way, helping us understand how courts have navigated these complex issues throughout history.
So as we bring this deep dive to a close, what's the big takeaway for our listener? What enduring lessons does Byrd v. Blue Ridge offer?
I think the key takeaway is this. Procedure matters. Even in a system deeply focused on substantive rights and fairness.
Right.
The rules of the game, those procedural details, can significantly affect the outcome.
It's a powerful reminder that law isn't just about lofty principles and theoretical debates. It's about real-world application where even seemingly small procedural differences can make or break a case.
Exactly. Byrd v. Blue Ridge highlights this reality perfectly.
Okay.
It serves as a reminder to lawyers and anyone interested in the law that understanding procedure is just as important as understanding the substantive legal issues at hand.
Well said. This deep dive into Byrd v. Blue Ridge has been a fascinating exploration.
It has.
Of federal jurisdiction, the power of the Seventh Amendment, and the lasting impact of a single Supreme Court decision. It really shows how these seemingly technical legal issues can have far-reaching consequences.
Absolutely.
Well, it's been great having you on the show today. Thanks for helping us break down this really important case.
It's been a pleasure unraveling this complex case with you.
Yeah.
It reminds us that the world of law is constantly evolving, full of intricate puzzles and thought-provoking debates.
And as always, we encourage our listeners to keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep digging deeper into the fascinating world of law. There's always something new to discover.